152 years ago today, the Rebbe Rashab was born in Lubavitch. To his father, the Rebbe Maharash, and to his grandfather, the Rebbe Tzemach Tzedek. 5 years later, when the Rebbe Maharash was 5 years old, he became a chassid. A chassid? 5 years old? Yes, his grandfather, the Tzemach Tzedek, he knew him, and he knew his cousin, who was the Rebbe Tashterna Sarah. She lived far away in Ukraine, but she came always to her grandfather. So he knew his grandchild, the Rebbe Rashab, and he knew his granddaughter, the Rebbe Tashterna Sarah, and he felt that for their character and for their holiness, they would do a great match and for a later date. That means that in the age of 5 years old, they got married? No. In that day, when the Rebbe Tzemach Tzedek made the shidduch between the two little children, in Pri 1a, he wrote Noim for them. He didn't write the whole page. He wrote the first line of his blessing, and then he gave to a scribe to write the whole Noim, where it says that for next 10 years, the father of the chosn and the father of the kallel are going to deposit some money in the account for their getting married 10 years later, when they will be 15. It was common then, in that period, for people to get married at age 15. So he wrote that for 10 years, they'll prepare, deposit some money every year. He wrote how much each one will deposit. And then in the end of the Noim, he wrote that I, as grandfather of both, am also going to deposit every year so much money into the account that 10 years later they will be getting married. Yes, that was a good wish. That was, Tzemach Tzedek was then very old. That was a half a year before the istalkes of the Rebbe Tzemach Tzedek. He didn't succeed to deposit every year, only the first time, because a half a year later was the istalkes of the Rebbe Tzemach Tzedek, of the grandfather of the chosn and of the kallel. But they continued the preparations, and 10 years later, when the Rebbe Rashab and the Rebbe Tzemach was 15, they got married. Where did they get married? In Lubavitch. So let's see what they wrote, what the Tzemach Tzedek wrote in the Noim. He knew then that you could never know what's going to be 10 years from now. Where is going to be the ability to make a chasana? So what did he write in the Noim? Well, he wrote in the Noim that 10 years from now, they're going to get married in Yerushalayim. Planning to go to Yerushalayim to make the chasana? In those days, going to Yerushalayim was like now going to the moon. It wasn't a plan. It was just to express the fact that we don't know now what's going to be 10 years from now, where is going to be the proper place. So they wrote Yerushalayim. actually, 10 years later, when they had to make the chasana, where did they do it? Oh, it became a big dispute. The Rebbe Marash, the father of the Rebbe Rashab, said, obviously, if not Yerushalayim, has to be Lubavitch. That's the center for Lubavitch Chassidus, and that's where the Mittel Rebbe was, and the Tzemach Tzedek was, and we are now here, so here it should be. Said the father of the Caliph, who was a Rebbe in the city of Avruch, somewhere far in Ukraine, says, no, we have a minhag that when there is a chosn and a kale, the chasana should be in the kale's place. Now it's also like that, the custom. So it should be in Avruch. Well, it was a big dispute. Finally, the chasana was in Avruch, in the place of the kale. But it was too far, and the Rebbe Marash himself, the father of the chosn, didn't go to the chasana. He just sent his wife, Rebbe Tzarifke, the mother of the Rebbe Rashab. He sent his Gabe, and they went there. It was then a week or 2 weeks travel on a horse and wagon. Long way to go. And they get married, and they came back. Obviously, he was still a 15 years old boy. He continued to sit on lab for many years. But he lived in a little house in Lubavitch near his father. That's how it was for the next 7 years. 8 years later, when the Rebbe Rashab was only 21 years old, he didn't even become 22. The Rebbe Marash got sick, and it was established in the Rebbe Marash. Chassidim turned to the Rebbe Rashab. He should become Rebbe. He said, no, I'm not ready for that yet. To become a Rebbe of Chassidim of Lubavitch in all Russia, I'm still too young, I still have to sit and learn. So he continued to learn for another 10 years. He didn't want to become a Rebbe. So that means he continued learning in Yeshiva, and he wasn't Rebbe, so he didn't say Maimorim. No, he said Maimorim. He didn't write Maimorim? Yes, he wrote Maimorim. Yeah, we have today in the Sefer Maimorim of the Rebbe Rashab. We'll take a look, we'll see a Sefer, a whole volume of Maimorim of Tofrish, Mem Gimel, Mem Dalet, Mem Hei, Mem Vov, and Tofrish Nun, and Nun Aleph, and Nun Beis, big volumes for every year. But to become involved in leadership of Chabad, he didn't. He wasn't ready. He sat and learned Diglar Chassidus. Well, even today, Bochum are chattering Maimorim. Well, they're just chattering Maimorim from the previous Rebbe. But he wrote Maimorim of himself. But that was just the way he learned Chassidus. He learned Nigla. We have tshuvas that he wrote in those years. But not as a Rebbe. We have letters that he wrote to many Chassidim about different problems, but it was just like a mashpia. He didn't agree to become Rebbe until 10 years later. In the end of Tofresh Nun Gimel, almost 11 years after the establishment of the Rebbe Marash, when the Rebbe Rashab was already then 33 years old, finally, he agreed to the request of Chassidim, and he assumed the leadership of Chabad and became officially the Rebbe. First thing he did when he became Rebbe, he decided we have to establish a yeshiva establish a yeshiva? What was till then? Bochum did allow? Sure, Bochum allowed. But it wasn't the yeshiva. It was Evan Bochum goes in a shul that where he lives, and he sits in shul, and he learns the whole day, and there is usually some people there that know how to learn, and they sit there and they answer the questions, and sometimes they give a shir. They didn't need a teacher to become a police to control them. They obviously was natural. Evan Bochum sits in shul and learns, and he has shurim from whoever says shurim. He didn't need anyone to control him, to encourage him, to force him to stay in class. Yes, in Lubavitch also there was some kind of yeshiva. What was it? It wasn't called a yeshiva. What was it in Lubavitch? It was called Yoishvim. In Yiddish, they would say Zitzas. What is Zitzas? It was like that then, in those days. Evan Bochum, when he gets his bar mitzvah, learns a cheder with the malamed, then he stays in shul and he learns the whole day, and then there is a Rosh Hashiva, so gives shiurim, till he becomes a chosn and he goes to get married. He becomes a chosn and gets married, and he didn't really get the taste, the atmosphere of a real chosn. So what would he do for 1 year after he got married or when he became a chosn? He would go to Lubavitch. There the main chassidim would come always, and the Rebbe was there. So they would sit there for a year and learn chassidus and hear from the chassidim about chassidus. So then they would get the real taste of becoming a real chassidus. So that was called Yeshivim. Yeshivim is like a yeshiva, you see. But it's not like a yeshiva. There was no dormitory and no classes and no nothing. But he would pay someone to in Lubavitch to stay at his house for a year. And during the day, he would go to the shul of the Rebbe. And there, Chassidim, old Chassidim would come, and he would hear from them stories and tambrengens, and they would explain him some Chassidus, and he would hear the memorium of the Rebbe, and he would hear Chazore. So this year would make him really not only a Bochum, but a Chassidus Sherim Gemah. The Rebbe Rashab decided this is not enough anymore. Assume today that would be the condition. That whoever wants to learn, let him go to shul and sit there a whole day and learn. How many of boys in your age would just go to the yeshiva and sit there and learn a whole day? If they don't have a class. It became, the world became different. There was a lot of reasons for that. In those years, there was a lot of pogroms. They killed in every city, they killed a lot of Jews. Many Jews escaped Russia and they went to Israel or to the United States. A million of Jews during those few years left Russia. So obviously those that stayed, the community became not as strong as before. So, just relying on the fact that every bochur that wants to learn would sit a whole day in yeshiva, in shul, and learn by himself, it wasn't enough. He felt he has to build a yeshiva. Well, to build a yeshiva is not such an easy thing. Well, obviously, he will be in the head of the yeshiva, he'll make the decisions. But you need a director, a principal, a mashpia, you need somebody to run the yeshiva. So he still didn't know exactly how this should be done. It took him another few years. He became Rebbe at Rosh Hashanah, Tov Rishon Dalet, the end of Tov Rishon Gimel. 4 years later, the Friedrich Rebbe, the son of the Rebbe Rashab, got married to Lubavitch and Yud Gimel Elman, professional Zion, just 4 years after the Rebbe Rashab became Rebbe. And they had a discussion among them, what would this new husband, Friedrich Rebbe, do after he gets married? And they discussed the plan of opening a yeshiva. And then they discussed, the Friedrich Rebbe told to the Rebbe Rashab, you know what? You want to open a yeshiva for so long, and you can't handle it by yourself. I'll handle it. You'll be on top of me. You'll give me the orders. You'll give me the directions. You rule every little thing, and I'll be your... Follow your orders, and I'll try to do everything around the yeshiva. In the Sheva Brochas of the Friedrich Rebbe, Chai Elul Tov Reishnal Zayin, the yeshiva was established. In Lubavitch? No, not exactly. They felt the yeshiva, for a yeshiva needs a little space where they are by themselves. Not in such a big hoo-ha where he didn't come and go. So he selected a city where they will go there and learn. And in Lubavitch stayed in the old school of what was called the Yeshvim, as we discussed before. People would come there and learn a little bit and then go away. It wasn't really a yeshiva, it was a dormitory. That's how it was for 1 year. But then, kids from all around Russia decided they want to be part of this yeshiva. That's their future. They don't see really a future in staying in shuls in every little city and village and just wait for somebody to come, give them a shiro and the answer. Then what's pshat in Pesach or what's pshat in the Maimer? They have to go to the yeshiva, to the dormitory. Wasn't enough place there in this little yeshiva for all of them. So finally, the Rebbe Rashab took off to the yeshiva to the Lubavitch. And it grew and it grew. And then they added even a cheder for children from age of 11 and on came to learn in Lubavitch in the yeshiva. So they learned them from 11 until they get married. No. They learned in the cheder in Lubavitch, that was the schedule there. They learned in the cheder in Lubavitch from 11 till after Bar Mitzvah of 14. And then they would go to a other city. The Rebbe opened their branches for what is called Mechine. Between Cheder and between the Yeshiva, they have to be in a place, in a closed place, a closed atmosphere with the Mashpia, and to get really the basics of Chassidus and learn there for 2 years. And then they come back to Lubavitch, to the yeshiva daily, to the south, on the age of 16 or so, where they would start learning all day. And that's how it was for the next 20 years. A lot of branches in a lot of cities, mainly for the age between Bar Mitzvah and 16, which is called Mechina. Main place was Shadrin, was in Babinovich and Nepal and many other cities. And then, after they become 16 or so, they come to learn of yeshiva. And this bochur was really the essence, the base for the Hasidic generation, the next Hasidic generation. 20 years. What happened after? 1 year later, started the First World War, where the Germans came to fight Russia. They took over part of Russia. Russia fought back. And the situation became worse and worse. Till the war came close to Lubavitch. And the Rebbe with the whole family had to flee Lubavitch. He fled Lubavitch to Rostov, who was the other end of Russia. Today, with the fast train, it's probably hours drive. Then it was several weeks to go. He couldn't take everything with himself. Obviously, he couldn't take his whole library. It was the whole Russia was full with wars. How could it pass with so many items? He put the whole library, packaged them in 20, 35 large crates, and he put them in storage in Moscow. And he himself took with himself a little bit, a few boxes with his phone that he would need, and he went till the store. The yeshiva stayed still a little bit in Lubavitch till they couldn't, and they had to move them to Kremenchuk, which is also far away in Ukraine. And then everything started again. Not only because there was then hunger and wars, the Bochum had to flee Lubavitch, and not only had to flee Lubavitch, but then there was a war. So the government gave out a decree that every young fellow has to go to the army. Usually they took to the army only part of the nation of the youth. And it was relatively easy to get out of it. Each one looked for ways how to avoid going to the army. You know, Siddish Abba would go to the Russian army, nothing would stay with him. They would permit him nothing. They would force him to eat not kosher and the work on Shabbos and get dressed like a goy and nothing. So every Bohr did everything he could to get a tool to avoid army. But now when the war came, the government didn't care about anything. Everyone goes to army because there is a war going on against us. The Rebbe Rashab got involved in that and he felt he must do something to save him. And it wasn't only the Bochrim. Even those that already got married and they became rabbis of cities, many of the Talmidim of Lubavitch, of Timrat Mimi, was rabbis, young rabbis in cities, they're all forced to go to the army. The Rebbe Rashab went then several times to Petersburg and he spoke to government officials. And he spoke to Gvirim to speak to government officials to get a special release for rabbis and for shoftim from going to the army, explaining that we can't live without that. We need a rob, otherwise they can't live. They need a sheikh, and otherwise they'll starve to death. And finally he got permission. And a few months later, they gave conditions to this rule, and he had to go again. And for 2 years, he was completely involved in his army, succeeded. But it became worse and worse. 2 years later, after the First World War ended, started the civil war in Russia. Between the Reds, which are called the Communists, who actually won there, and between the White and the Green, the Denikins and all the other groups. And when there was a civil war in the whole country, became so many machlas and people died in the street and there was a hunger. And finally, the Rebbe Hashab himself fell sick and there was a stalker for the Rebbe Hashab. And based on this information, he was young. He wasn't even 60, he was 59. And he did so much that he prepared. His situation broke him, broke his body, and his stomach. He became sick, and he knew his hours are numbered. He called him to his Yechidus room where he was. He called him in, the Friedrich Rebbe, his son, to the bedroom and says, take me into the Yechidus room. I want my last hour should be there. And then he told him, I'm going to the sky. I'm living with you everything I wrote. All those years that the Rebbe Hashab was in Lubavitch and leading the yeshiva, he started being together with the yeshiva by also saying Maimorim every week, explaining the basics of Siddur. It wasn't just a Maimer, he said, on Shabbos. He would say the Shabbos, the Maimer on Friday night. And then there was the Bochim Chazan, the Maimer between themselves. And then every week, the best Bochim that knew better the Maimer, they would go into Yechides and to Chazan in front of the Rebbe, summarize what they understood from the Maimer. And then whenever they didn't understand, they had the opportunity to ask the Rebbe what was pshat in the Maimer. And the Rebbe would explain that. Just like you know in a class that the teacher gives a shir and you understand most of it, but not really everything. And the next day he says, I want to hear from you what you understood. And if you don't understand something, don't be shy and ask. And I will explain it. And that's what he did every week with the Bochim. So a few hours before passing, before the Istalkes, he says, "Ich gehe in Himmel, und ich soll ihm Gott reich." And then he wrote a Zavore to the Friedrich Rebbe, saying that I trust you that this yeshiva that will grow up, which is the main base for Siddur and Yiddishkeit and Rashi. Don't give up. Don't give it up. Build it up. Make sure I trust you that it will be pulled up. And that's what the Rebbe did. Obviously, we know that in that year, the civil war became stronger and stronger until the communists took over, and the communists didn't permit any yeshivas to stay, and they closed down all the yeshivas, and every Malamed that taught his Talmidim, they would arrest him and send him to exile, and everything had to go underground. And all the yeshivas in the whole Russia, hundreds of them, closed down. The only yeshiva that stayed was an underground yeshiva of Tenchet Mimi. Here and there, they split it up to many cities. In every place should be only something like 10 bochim, not more, just for hiding and trying to make sure they will be caught. This mysterious nefesh of staying in the yeshiva, this is what they have learned. In their time, they learned in yeshiva of the Mimi. The Mesiras Nefesh they learned, the Chassidus they learned, and out of all yeshivas, the only one that was sacrificing and stayed underground was that Tevachim. Yes, there was other Fochim also that wanted to stay and learn underground. The only way for them to be able to stay in yeshiva was to go to Lubavitcher yeshiva, and that's when they became Lubavitchers. My father was one of them. He wasn't from a Lubavitcher house. He was in a city that everything freaked out. They didn't have any more yeshivas and chadorim. They would, if they found something, they would arrest him right away. He wanted to stay Jew and to go to yeshiva. You know, the only yeshiva was underground yeshiva in Vitebsk of Temchut Mimi. So he went there. That's how he became a Lubavitcher. And that's how his son is a Lubavitcher standing in front of you. And that's how his son's son is staying every day in front of you as a Lubavitcher. Because then in Temchut Mimi, that's where they learned the real Mesiras Nefesh. Then Mesiras Nefesh was to stay in an underground yeshiva. Today the Mesiras Nefesh that the Rebbe is demanding from us is that when we grow up, we shouldn't think so much about going to business and become rich. We should go to Shliches and make sure another one is also getting knowledge about Yiddishkeit. And we have thousands and thousands of Ingelites that go away to live in a place where there is no one that they know, no Chassidish Ingelite, no Fube Ingelite, no kosher food easy, no mikveh easy, no shul easy. And they go for the Mesiras Nefesh only was because they learned in Temchut Mimi that their life is for Mesiras Nefesh. This is the yeshiva that the Rebbe Nishmo Satan was meyaset then, and this yeshiva that I'm standing in now is the continuation of this yeshiva that teaches us not only to be meiser nefesh ourselves and open the Gemara and look into the Gemara what the Gemara says, but the Mesiras Nefesh that we should know, that we have to know the Gemara, because this will bring us up later to become like the Rebbe wants us to be. Like the Rebbe wants us not only to know the Gemara for ourselves and the Chassidus for ourselves, but also to teach others. And also in a difficult situation when we have to go an shliches to a far place, we will stay there as the Rebbe wants us to be. And that's how it will be, that the Rebbe will see us, he will say, like he mentioned so many times, here you could see, when you see the results of this young life that go to a far place, and with Mesiras Nefesh, they stay with Yiddishkeit, and they stay with the children in Yiddishkeit, and they teach others Yiddishkeit, even though the children don't see too many Yiddish Yingelite. All this is Reug Yudunim Shegidaltem. This is what they learned when they was in Yeshiva. That's what you purpose of your staying in Yeshiva here is now. Not only to understand the Tesvas, not only to understand the Maimer, but to build up yourself in a way that you should be able to fulfill the wish of the Rebbe. He should be able to tell us, Re'u Gedulim Shegidaltem. This is just a summary of the history of the Rebbe Rashab of today's birthday and of what he has done in his life. I'm sure that some of you have everything I discussed and wanted to ask some details they didn't really understand on this subject or other subjects, and for the rules of the school probably they didn't ask anything, so if you have any questions I'll be more than happy to try to answer you. Yes. What's your name? Yes. Your father was my student some 22 years ago in Russia. So I'm glad to hear that 22 years later You are the student of my son. Go ahead.
The author ever contradicts himself in the Siddur and in the Shulchan Aruch. Which, according to, and how is that even possible?
It is the Alter Rebbe wrote first his Shulchan Aruch. Then, some 20 years later, he decided to write, in addition to the regular Shulchan Aruch, two other things. One was some special collections of halachas, like Hilchas Talmud Torah, Hilchas Birkas Hanani, Seder Birkas Hanani, Hilchas Tefillin, and in a special general summarizing the halacha. And the second thing was to write a siddur for people to be able to daven in, Lubavitch and Nusach, and also all halachas that are related to shul and davening. So that was 20 years later. There are in general two differences between writing the Shulchan Aruch 20 years earlier and between writing the Siddur 20 years later. First is, 20 years later, as he explained himself, when I wrote the Shulchan Aruch, I really didn't have the strength to build on my own understanding, and if I see that the Mogen Avraham and other Mefarshim are basking one way, I followed them. But over the 20 years, I saw some places that I think it's not like their Maskon. That's what he wrote in introduction to Seder Birkas Hanani. If you take a look in the Siddur, is printed the Seder Birkas Hanani, there is a three-line introduction to that, where he writes that in addition to what I once did just to collect from all the Sforim, the Sokim in Halacha, Birkas Hanani, I here built on what I understood from the Gemara and the Rishonim, sometimes different of my first understanding 20 years earlier. And here I will pass through like my understanding, even though if I have proof that it's not like the Taz pass through or the Mogen Avraham pass through. That's what it says in short in these three lines introduction. That's one reason why there are some differences. And obviously, we pass it like the Siddur, because this is 20 years later where he writes, that's my final decision. Then comes another thing, that in the Siddur he speaks already to Chassidim that they are ready to be more machmir. Sometimes there is a machlekes, so when there is a machlekes, you could rely on one day or the other day. If you take a look at the Siddur in Shabbos, there is Seder Achnosas Shabbos, and then Hilchas Ratzel Shabbat, where he writes that even though that al pi halacha you could rely on one day, but there is still another day, and you should be machmir for that day. Because after all, it's a sofek, maybe you'll be aver on the Yisur. Just like one of the examples. You are allowed to eat nuts on Shabbos. But it's a little complicated. You have to do it the proper way. Why? Because when you break the nuts, they are mixed with the shells. And if you take the pieces that you want to eat and you eat, that's okay. But if you take the shells and you put them away, that's better. So it's hard to watch. And also those shells are muktzeh after they broke. So you're not allowed to touch them. You have to take them off the table from the side of your hand. It's difficult. So therefore, says the Alter Rebbe, I advise we shall refrain from eating nuts and Shabbos. We don't. this is not the halacha that says in Shulchan Aruch. That way he's writing to the Chassidim, we should try harder. So that's another example of the second thing, even though that you are allowed to, but still we should have extra efforts, since we are Chassidim, to do, not to do things, even though if they are allowed to be done. What's your name?
Why did
the Torah
made it right away at
5 years
only? Couldn't wait till 15?
Well, Tzimach Tzedek was then, as I mentioned, a half a year before the Histalkus. And he wanted to make sure he knew this boy. Because when a boy is 5 years old, sometimes you could really recognize him. And he knew this girl. And as we see later, how this Rabbi Rashab and this Rabbi Zashtel Soren was, he realized that I'm them. And he wanted to make sure, I will make sure that they become Chassidim. It's not usual. It's very out of ordinary. But he felt he wanted to make it. So he made it in the end of Tov Reish Chof Hei. A half a year later, when he started to the Rabbi Zashtel.
Question. I already like heard maybe counselors. I'd just like to hear maybe another opinion. In davening, most of davening is praising Hashem and saying how great He is. But Hashem is way beyond the description of a person and the words He could put him. So isn't it belittling Him?
So, two things. First of all, you gave an introduction. Most of it is praising. As we know that in Shmoneh Esrei we have 18 or 19 blessings, says the Gemara in the Shulchan Aruch, the first three and the last three are praising, and the middle 12 or 13 are asking for bakoshes from Hashem. Therefore, Einu Hashem is not the praise. Boruch Aleinu is not the praise. It's a question that we ask from Hashem. But usually when you come to a king and you tell him, hey king, give me this and give me that, it's not proper. So you have to start how great you are. Then please give me, and then I really admire you. So you start with praise and you end with praise, and your questions come in the middle. That's for your first sentences that you said. Now the Chachamim say that if you start praising, you could say a million of things, and you'll never end, and you'll still not say nothing. So therefore, the Chachamim say that when you say the Baruch Ato Hashem, the fifth, Baruch of Shmoneh Esrei, say only those words that it says that. Why? Because this is what the Chachamim decided to say. If you say one more word, you make it worse. Why do you make it worse? Because you want to say, and Hashem is this and that. If you start saying, say everything, and you can't say everything. So therefore we say only what we were told to say, and that's where it starts. So therefore there is not a problem of how could we praise, because we could never finish praising. We praise only those things that Anshik Neses Agdelo were organized in the first Boche, or in the last three Boches, what we should say, and not more.
Yeah. I have a question that will lead to another question. Omkelus lived before the Chumkum or after?
Omkelus lived about the time of the Chumkum Beis HaMikdash. He was a girl. He was a nephew of the king that destroyed Israel. And he sent him with a group of making sure Israel is destroyed. But when he came there and he saw what the Jews are, he decided that he stays there and became a guest. When the king found out about that, he sent emissaries to force him back. They came there, they took him, and there is a whole story. The Gemara said what it was. The final group that he said, okay, he told them, If you speak to him, he'll make you become a ger. So don't speak to him, just grab him and go. So that's what they did. So he said, okay, I'm going. They left the door. He kissed the mezuzah. So they tell him, what are you doing? So he says, you see, the difference between us and others, in other countries, the whole nation is saving the king. By us, the king is saving us. So this mezuzah on the door saves us in the house. And they got more into it, and they also stayed. So the king didn't know anything else that he could say, because whoever he sends to them becomes a ger. So that's how we became a ger, and that's how we wrote the Talmud.
What's the reason? Who started Shnai Mikro? What's the reason?
Shnai Mikro Vechad Targum, there is a din that we have to learn. And the time for learning is mainly on Shabbos. It started, it says that Kriya Satira started, the Gemara says in Bava Kama that Kriya Satira started with Meshe Rabbeinu. It doesn't say in the Chumash. But Meshe Rabbeinu, the first Hakona that he did on his own, with the Nevim that was then, was that Shabbos, they should read the Torah. And then they added not only Shabbos, but also Monday and Thursday. Why should they read Shabbos and Monday and Thursday? Says the Gemara, because he didn't want 3 days should go where they have to walk in the fields and everything, and they wouldn't even have the chance to hear, to learn some Torah. So at least the minimum is that at least 3 days shouldn't pass without learning. So they should read the Torah Monday and Thursday and Shabbos. The fact that everyone should learn for himself, the Shnai Mikro Vechad Targum, became much later. But the original takona of reading in the Torah on Shabbos and Monday and Thursday is a takona of Meshe Rabbeinu. And finalized it, the Gemara says, was Ezra. Ezra was the one that came with the Eden to build up the second Mikdash, and he was a takona that Shabbos, they should have 7 aliyahs. Monday and Tuesday and Thursday, they should have 3 aliyahs. This whole process ended in Ezra. So it started with Meshe Rabbeinu and ended with Ezra.
Is there any hint in the entire Torah?
Yes. What?
Is there any hint in the entire Torah about reading the Torah or
the Shnei Mikro? No. It's a Rabbonim, but it's a Takon of Meshe Rabbeinu.
What do the kids do
under 11? Did they go to school? Each one had a malamed, but we are speaking about cheder then. It wasn't like
they didn't have classes.
They had classes in each village. They would have classes for little children. But here they call the cheder what you call the yeshiva. Is this called a cheder or a yeshiva? You have a mitzvah time. You call it yeshiva. Then, when the Rebbe Rashab made a dormitory in Lubavitch for children from 11 till 13, he called it cheder.
Why is it only by 11
and 13? Because before 11, no one is going to send from a village of 2 days away to send them. Those children that became 11 and they came to learn in Lubavitch, they didn't see their parents only once a year. They left for a dormitory. In today's, even if you go to learn in South Africa, you still come from time to time to see your parents. Then if you went to learn in yeshiva at the age of 11, you don't see your father and mother anymore, only once a year. Obviously, before 11, you can't do that. So till 11, they learn in the city, with Melamdim, in the house or in the shul. But at 11, in those years, if you are already ready for the Siras Nefesh, then you go till Lubavitch. And they called it Hadorim, because it is still 11, till Bar Mitzvah, they still called it Hadorim
and Adish. And why only until 14, do they do it until Cheder, and then they go to, like, a learning?
Because really, to start learning more good, You need a mashpia to sit with you and to teach you the Gemara and the Chassidus. And in Lubavitch, he felt is not the proper. It's too much like New York City. And if you really want to concentrate, it's better when you are in a different place. And it's also easier because if you have thousands of Talmidim in Lubavitch, it's too hard. So they want to divide it. So they felt the best thing to divide it is that from Bar Mitzvah till 16, they should go to Mechina in a special place with the Mashpia, with the Rosh Hashiva, and then they'll get the proper attention.
And like if you said, he got married by 15, that means that he didn't learn.
No, he continued learning after Yeshiva. After he got married, he didn't go to work after he got married on 15. They, as you see, the Rebbe Rashab, he continued learning till he became 33 when he became Rebbe. So he continues still learning for 18 years.
Did he also still learning when he became Rebbe?
Sure he did, but he's in Maimonim and he wrote Shuvas. But he learned not as a student. He already taught to others. Then he just sat the whole day and learned.
Was he like a teacher? Like after he came Rebbe?
I just explained before that he would say Shabbos and Maimonim. And then the Talmidim would come in and he would want to hear how they explained, to summarize what he said. And if they made a mistake, he corrected them. And then he told them, so you have any questions? And they asked questions for what he didn't understand. And he would explain them.
Well, like, would he ever make a mistake? If he made mistakes,
when he was a rabbi, we assume that everything that he says is holy.
And plus also, between
Nadal
and
Einstein,
so 3 years,
Tocqueville, Tocqueville. It wasn't really thing of him, it was the Geishim, as I mentioned. People were used to come there and see it, and just not as a Masuda de Geishim.
Why did he take that long to
Belton? Because he wasn't able as the Rebbe to become himself the director and the principal. He couldn't. He needed someone that he could rely on that could run it till his son was still a father, learned for himself. So he wasn't ready for that. After his son got married on age 17, that's when he took the obligation on himself, and then that's when the Rebbe.
So who took it? Who took it over?
The Rebbe?
The Rebbe Rashab was principal of that field.
The Rebbe Rashab was the director and then the advisor. But the Friedrich Rebbe, after 17 years, till became 37 for 20 years, he was the director of the yeshiva and he was running all the activities. Yes?
What started the entire thing that you wear a double covering on your head?
Start again?
What's the reason you
wear
a double covering?
It says that whenever you daven, it says hikoy. You have to have a special preparation in you for your daven. And the Shulchan Aruch, if you take a Shulchan Aruch from Simen Tzadik till Simen Tzadik Hey, every day, every Simen is to tell you one thing that you have to prepare yourself when you go to daven. You have to stand proper, think proper, and one of the things is to get dressed proper. What is to get dressed proper? To add on what you usually walk with. There is nothing wrong if you go with a shirt and with a yarmulke. But when you daven, you should add on your shirt something and add on your yarmulke something. After you get married, then in addition to that, you also have a gartel for hikoy extra preparations.
So it doesn't really make a difference to why we wear hats and some other wear strimal. They're both covering. It doesn't make a difference.
The reason why strimal and hats is up to the gzeres that was in Russia for gzeres olabushim and the gzeres that was in other places and the custom that was there, and it's a whole complicated subject to discuss, not on one hand. But if there actually it became the custom that there, after wedding, you wear a shtaimel, and here, only the rabbeim of Chabad used to wear a shtreimel on Shabbos, and the chassidim used to wear not even a hat, used to wear a casket in Russia. He wasn't allowed to wear a hat in Russia. If they would see you with a hat, they would arrest you. There was a different thing. They didn't permit you go with Jewish clothes. You had to go dressed just like a regular person, not something special clothes for Jews. So that caused all complications why there's different customs in the clothes. Yes, what's your name?
Ilikolsky.
Yes.
Why didn't the Rebbe wear shtreimel?
Because the Rebbe himself, he didn't want to be separated from the city in everything, not only a shtreimel. He just wore like everyone, and he did like everyone. They once gave him a special silver pitcher for the wine that he would drink on the He says, he explained in the letter, I don't want, I should have a different picture than all chassidim they just take from a regular bottle. I also want. They once gave him a silver esrig holder. Everyone has it, but not everyone. So he didn't want to use it. He didn't want to use silver just like a regular person. His whole behavior always was just to be just like a regular person. If he goes between other people, if they don't move away, you would recognize that he's something special, not like the others in him. That was the reason that he didn't want to be different.
Why didn't
Friedrich Rebbe he used to wear a shtreimel
shabbos? Why didn't he want to be like a regular person?
I don't know, because a Rebbe has to be a Rebbe. And if he's a regular person, you don't just... like a questioning if the teacher of the class would just be like a regular boy and nobody would have to report to anybody, nobody would have the rule over you, if you need some power. But his character was always, that's why also before he became rabbi, he was so hiding everything that he himself was, nobody should know. He didn't want, he never felt comfortable to be outstanding. He couldn't stand it. So it actually became that after he became rabbi, he also didn't want to become outstanding. So he did only with the most, what he was.
Did the Friedrich Rebbe ever wear like